Всім добрий вечір.
On behalf of the brave. On behalf of every father and every mother. Wings for freedom.
Warriors
and paves the way for a new history.
Hello everybody and welcome to a stream from Tochny today. We will talk about the devastating attack that happened today on Ukraine's infrastructure and also civilian infrastructure. We also have a very special guest here from Ukraine, our friend Vasil Pitlushny. He's a lawyer from Dnipro. And we also have, as other guests from Tochny, we have Erland and John Rich, Bionade, and Jonathan.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, everybody.
Hello and welcome. The attack today was, as I said, was devastating. To like hop into the topic directly, to give a like short overlook, it was the largest attack so far that was tracked, with an amount of about 158 attack drones and missile. I would assess it, John, correct me, am I wrong, more like some kind of terror attack with the purpose of destroying civilian infrastructure and also to, yeah, basically kill civilians in residential areas.
Yes, that is more or less accurate, although we have seen, particularly around Kharkiv, specifically strikes against electrical and other critical infrastructure in addition.
Yes, this is like something which is both important for civilian, but also probably for military infrastructure. If we talk about the energy grid of Ukraine, do we have information how severe these kind of civilian structures were hit before we talk about more the terror attack on the residential areas?
So in terms of critical infrastructure specifically, the only indication that I saw that there were, for example, blackouts were in Kharkiv. It was reported by the mayor and then the governor of Kharkiv Oblast itself that there were issues with the electrical grid in numerous parts of the region. I haven't seen, or perhaps I just missed them, of course, but I haven't seen reports that there were issues with the grid elsewhere. So that would indicate that the electrical impact was relatively localized to Kharkiv, at least based upon the specific data that I saw.
Okay, thank you for your giving a bit more insight. Now, when we talk about the attack on the civilian residential areas, we saw terrible like footage, videos. There was a mall hit in Dnipro, which like resulted in large damage and also injured people. Also, I remember I have seen footage from Odessa on residential area being attacked. To give some further context, I want to add that as I saw it in social media, some people understood it as a retaliation attack after the Rupucha class landing ship in Feodosia was recently hit by Ukrainian missile strikes. But this is, from my point of view, a wrong assumption, because MRI, John, maybe you can explain this also a bit more in depth. This, to conduct this kind of attack, it has to be substantially planned and executed properly.
Right. So drawing conclusions there is tricky. So what we saw, there were, when the Russians began their infrastructure strike campaign last winter, obviously 2 days, the first major raid of that campaign was on October 10th, 2 days after the Kerch Bridge was destroyed by a vehicle-borne IED, or damaged, I should say, by a vehicle-borne IED on October 8th, a lot of people drew that conclusion that that raid was a direct response to the Kerch Bridge. as it happened, that was not the case. Bellingcat, the insider.ru, and I believe Der Spiegel, as a result of some investigative journalism, they were able to pull cell phone records in Russia and call logs, and they were able to estimate that it had been planned at least 2 weeks prior to the actual raid. So there wasn't actually a causal relationship there. That said, while that gave us a sort of a blueprint for how long it took the Russians to really complete their targeting and mission planning cycle for that particular large raid. Again, this is more than a year ago. It was about a week or two. I would presume, given that the Russians are obviously, they are capable of learning as individually and as an institution, that cycle has probably shortened. So I am skeptical that there is a direct causal relationship with the destruction of the Novocherkassk. It could be, but I suspect that it's somewhat unlikely. Sort of the middle ground there would be to say that they likely already had a raid in the works being prepared. They may have moved the timetable for executing it ahead as sort of a symbolic gesture, but I'm somewhat skeptical of the notion that it was directly related to the sinking of that Rapucha-class LST.
Yes, I agree. I think it's highly unlikely that maybe the strike was planned for, I don't want to speculate, but in the coming days, and it was a bit like conducted earlier. But in general, we had the perspective that this kind of attempt to overflood the air defense grid from Ukraine was a planned and executed thing. Also, I want to add a statement from an official. Like today, Ukraine's Air Force spokesman Yuri Inert also confirmed the like unprecedented scale of the attack this morning, where, like, I quote him, he said, "We have never seen so many targets on our monitors at once."
So as some historical context here, this is definitively the largest raid for which the Ukrainian Air Force has released specific numbers of observed launches. That said, it's my understanding is that there were some larger raids early last year. I believe the initial raid on February 24th, 2022, that opened the invasion, I believe that was somewhat larger, if my memory is served, based upon the vague numbers that were released, although we didn't get a specific detailed figure. That didn't start until September of last year.
So basically, when I understand you right, it wasn't the largest strike yet so far, because in the beginning it just was not tracked.
More or less, or at least, well, I'm sure the Ukrainian Air Force has detailed records of it, but they never publicly released them in detail. They'd not begin publicly disclosing the contents of Russian raids in a specified and detailed manner until September of 2022, so a little over a year ago. And so I see Erland has pulled up one of the graphs that I've been working on for a little bit now. That's why you'll notice that the data begins in October. I didn't include the full data set from September because there were a lot of systematic issues, shall we say, and inconsistencies with how the data was reported in September that I figured it was better to just leave it off. But that is the reason why it only goes back 14 months instead of farther.
Oh, it's very interesting data. While we are looking at it, we also can see some kind of shift clearly, as what we can see is the amount of UAVs is like a large part of the strikes. Like when we compare to 2022, where there were more like cruise missile systems used, and the usage shifted consequently towards more or a larger share of UAVs, especially these Shahed drones. So it's kind of a shift, and probably Maybe you can explain. It's a stockpile thing, I guess. I'm not sure, but the Russians don't have though so many missiles in the stockpile anymore because they use most of them.
So in terms of the overall trend that we've seen, the cruise missile usage peaked as a relative fraction of the types of munitions that they were expending. That peaked, I believe, before September of last year, so it's not really plotted on these graphs. The Shahed was first employed by Russia in September of 2022, and very quickly we saw it become a sizable fraction of their overall munitions that they are expending. During the winter infrastructure campaign last year, late last year and early this year, they still had a fairly heavy reliance on cruise missiles, as they still had a fairly sizable number left in their pre-invasion stocks. That said, they were very clearly expending them at a rate that substantially exceeded their ability to replace them. I believe they were expending on average 150 to 200 cruise missiles or so per month, when they only produced about 30 or so per month, 30 to 40 per month. That situation has obviously changed since then. The Russians have been able to dramatically scale cruise missile production. My very rough estimate is that they're now producing between Caliber and KH-101 somewhere on the order of in excess of 100 units per month, 110, 120 maybe. So they've been able to substantially increase their capacity there. But what we saw coming out of the winter infrastructure campaign through the spring into the summer, then particularly into this fall, up until really the past month or so, a very heavy reliance on Shaheds, as they were really rate limited by their ability to actually produce cruise missiles. They were literally expending them as they came off the factory floor, because again, they had depleted their existing stocks during that winter infrastructure campaign. Now, what we seem to have observed, particularly if you look at the monthly trends, is that they expended no cruise missiles in October or November. That would have enabled them to probably stockpile, 200, 250, maybe 300, depending on what their monthly production rate was. And then they've obviously just now, within the past 24 hours, expended 90 of those, plus some additional ones earlier this month. So that would be a fairly sizable portion of their depending on where they're pulling it from, either monthly production or existing stocks. But they should have enough munitions and inventory to do this probably, I'd say, 2 to 3 more times, raids of this scale.
Oh, yeah, perfectly. You already answered my next question with it. So we can conclude that the Russians are not able to, as you said, conduct this kind of large-scale strike more than 2 or 3 times, which is not good news, but it's limited.
Well, I should say, so depending on how they choose to approach their targeting process and their strike cycle, they could indefinitely execute one of these raids per month if they, stockpile a month worth of, cruise missile production, then expend them all in a single raid. They could sustain that indefinitely. But what we are likely to see is, again, they've accumulated at least 2 months of stock. So that's, 200 to 300 missiles, depending on the exact production rates. They've expended about 100 of those now. So again, depending, plus the 100 that they'll produce this month, that translates into 2 to 3, and then they could potentially sustain again one per month on top of that, if that makes sense.
I guess, yes. I think you gave us a good understanding on the general perspective. From my point of view, my question would be, is there any other kind of strategy which is applicable? No, I will formulate it differently. The Ukrainian air defense grid has been expanded substantially. And is there any kind of other attempt to conduct, partly these kind of destructive attempts without using a large amount and overflow, try to overload the air grid?
I'm not quite sure I follow you. Follow your question exactly.
Yeah, it was. I'll try it once more. No problem. So, is there any kind of strategical different attempt they could try to penetrate the air defense grid without, like, a different strategy? That's my question.
So, generally speaking, the larger a raid is in terms of the number of munitions expended, the more effective it's likely to be in terms of the number that are able to penetrate the opposing integrated air and missile defense system. The issue is the Russians have not been able to achieve saturation. I have some graphs of this. They aren't really done and ready to be shown, but broadly speaking, the Russians have failed to achieve saturation. Even if the very large raids, the intercept rate hasn't declined that much, maybe 10-15%, which is, you know, obviously that's meaningful, but that's not the kind of catastrophic saturation that one would expect with such large raids. In general, if the Russians want to have success with their strike campaign while not expending vast quantities of munitions, really the only approach is to lean very heavily on ballistic missiles, simply because Ukraine has a very limited number of ABM assets, and these are mostly assigned to defending Kyiv and a few other very specific locations. Ukraine has now 3 Patriot batteries, 1 SAMP-T battery, and I believe 2 S-300V battalions, and that is the maximum extent of Ukraine's ABM capabilities. So obviously, you know, what we saw, you know, just in this previous raid is that 5 Kinzhals were launched along with 14 Iskander M's and S-300, S-400 surface-to-air missiles being used for land attack. None of those were intercepted. So it's pretty clear that, you know, again, the level of ABM coverage is still very insufficient for the number of assets that must be defended. So that would be where the Russians try to lean heavily if they want to be able to maximize their effect for a limited number of munitions expended. Obviously, though, they're limited by the fact that they produce far fewer ballistic missiles than they produce cruise missiles, on the order of, I believe, the latest estimate that the spokesperson for HUR referenced was 25 to 30 Iskander M's per month, compared to, again, in excess of 100 cruise missiles per month.
Thank you very much, John and Jay, for giving us an overview of what is happening and what's the situation in Ukraine. I want to move to our guest, Vasil. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Erland, I hear you clearly. Thanks.
Thank you very much for joining us, Vasil. Are you safe now?
Yes, I think. It's a complicated question. I think I can't easy to answer. Yeah, because in 1 minute, or maybe 5 minutes, or maybe less, or maybe more, it can be air alert, and also it can be another planned attack or something else. Now I feel plus minus safety, but it can be changed in any moment.
Yeah, I understand. It's good to hear that you and I think your family is safe, as far as I understand. Where were
we
you?
We hope
when...
so.
Oh, that's yeah. I hope so too. And where were you in the Dnipro when the attacks happened today?
I think attacked started maybe 6 or 6:30, maybe, and continue for a long time. In that time, I was sleeping in my home, and my flat. I think it's near maybe 4.5 kilometer from this maternity hospital and other damaged buildings which were damaged today.
I understand. So you were woken up by the missiles, or did you hear any alarms before?
I think alarm was a long time before. I think it started maybe at 4 o'clock and continuous. After I think months, years in such situation, you don't go in all air alerts to shelter because it's unreal. It's unreal because sometimes we have 12 air alerts in a day, 15 air alerts, and in every moment to go, it's very hard. And also we understand that we have many air alerts, but when Russian MiG is in skies, and this MiG isn't attacked every time Ukraine. It can be air alert, but it might be no reason to hide or something else. That is why it's complicated to make decision, and we have some extra information by another channels were informed it is ballistic, it is MiG, or it's about something else, and it writes about what a color of our region, a color of I think it's about a color how to describe situation. It can be green if it will be near cancelled air alert, or it can be yellow when it's not very big treaty or something like that. It can be orange, or it can be red, and it can be right and you have to run or something like that.
I understand.
And if you live for a long time in such situation, I think nobody in Ukraine go in any air alert to shelter. I think we don't have such people.
So, do you know how far you were from the attacks when they happened, more or less?
I think, as I said before, it's maybe 4, maybe 4.5 kilometer from maternity hospital and trade center and other damaged buildings. But I want to say that even if you 4 kilometers and such length, it's very loud. It's very loud. You feel it's like very near, but after that you understand that it's not. Sometimes in your flat or in shelter you feel like a little earthquake or something like that.
So was this more a lot louder than you ever heard before, or have you been kind of used to this these sounds?
It's very bad to say, but you live in such situation and you are docked, and that is why it's something like used to. Yes, it's very bad, but it's going such way. Also, about it was loud or not, it was very loud. I think something like that I have heard in June this year. Okay. Last time. But if I revise or remind about 1 year ago, it was that times I think was something like that, like today, because explosions we have very many. I think maybe near 20 explosions.
Wow. And what did you do with your you and your family when the attacks happened? I know that you ended up in a shelter at some point, but how did it happen? Did you walk down to your shelter in your building, or where did you go?
That photo that you have, it's a photo, it's a booth, it was an afternoon. Also, we have air alerts, and my son was taking part in extra classes in IT sphere, and I come to him to take him from that, and it started air alert, and everyone go to the shelter, because after morning, everyone understands that treaty is real, and it's not only real, it's significant real.
Yeah, but I guess, do you kind of distract the kids with doing these activities? Is it planned that you kind of go to the shelter? And
you understand, and they don't. It's a good, I think, for them, for their mental health. I think it's good for them. They don't feel very disturbed about this. I think I understand that it's bad to say, yeah. And bad to have such situation, because it's not normal. We haven't have to live in a such situation, in a such style of life, in a such terrorist treaties all time. But I understand that our child not feel so very, very disturbed or something, very mental dysfunction about this, something like that. Yeah, they play there, they speak to each other, they be a children.
They're being children. That's good to hear that children manage to still be kids and play around even under these absolutely horrible circumstances.
Yeah, in shelter, many people, it isn't enough fresh air, but it's better than be killed or something like that, or injured.
But okay, so I understand you have this shelter, which is specifically made for the kids, right?
Yeah.
Can you explain how this works?
Yeah, it's a shelter of one of IT schools in Ukraine, in Dnipro, and they understand that air alerts are too usual, and that is why they don't want to interrupt totally study process. Yeah, that is why they organized a shelter. And make, if you see on photo, they, it's, I think, very child-oriented. And they make classes in shelter when we have so long air alerts. And they have computers there, they have projectors, they have, you see also, it's a table for, I think, small tennis or ping pong. If you understand what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not very, I think, fresh air there, but you are in safe.
Okay. So do any of you other panelists have a question for Vasil?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, I hear you. Thank you.
Brilliant, thanks. Yeah, thanks for joining us today. Just one question. I'm sorry if you've covered this already. During the attacks, when these children are in their underground classrooms, my first question is an obvious one. Can they hear the attacks happening?
Yes, I think you understand that they not understand every explosion as an attack. They can think that's only boom, what is, why, And that is why maybe it doesn't disturb them.
So the percussive effects of explosions have become normalized.
It's bad to say, as I said before, but in some way, yes.
And what kind of audio stimuli or other kind of, you know, distractions mute this out from a child's conscious thought? Is there a form of audio stimuli which teachers and parents and caregivers try to use so that these noises are louder than the explosions that the children are hearing?
Sorry, can you repeat or clarify a little what?
Do the adults play louder noises to try and drown out the sounds of the explosions?
No, I don't think so. I think children are more louder than adults.
Okay, all right, thanks. So I guess that
nobody tried to hide this volume. I think nobody tried to do this. I think my son understands what has happened. I explained him. I'm not sure at all that everyone tell all truth, maybe tell some of part of truth, not to make harm, or they thought that they can make harm. But I am telling full truth about this situation.
Thank you. It's incredible to hear that children are able to do other activities whilst living through this. In the teaching of special educational needs students and those with social, mental, emotional health issues, audio, visual stimuli plays a part in helping to focus children. And it's fascinating to hear that children in Dnipro and in other places in Ukraine, they continue with their learning, yet they are aware of this. So that's really interesting. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome, Jonathan.
All right, that's my only question. I'll open the floor to anybody else. Thanks.
So I have another question for Vasil. Do you know any reports of injured and casualties from Dnipro? What is the latest news that you heard?
Erland, I can't say about Dnipro. I know news about whole Ukraine. I think it's 30 people were killed, and maybe 150 or 60 were injured for whole Ukraine. In Dnipro, I have heard maybe not more than 10 people, but I'm not sure because I was interested about whole Ukraine, about for our country. And also I want to inform that really interesting to know that it's good news that no woman, no child in maternal hospital were injured. It's very important because they go to the shelter. And also four Ukrainians born in this morning and after finished air alert, they were removed in other place, in a safe place.
Okay, well, it's devastating to hear that so many people were killed in this.
Oh, it's horrible. Sorry, Erland. It's horrible. It's another one terrorist attack, the Russians, which they are making day by day. Yeah, today attack was very massive. I think I understand that I am not sure 100%, but I think it's maybe the biggest attack. Pavlo Tkachenko have written that in Dnipro were killed six people. Thanks, Pavlo. for information. I think it was the biggest attack, missile and drones.
Yeah.
From the start.
I also would have a question towards Vasil, if it's possible.
Yeah, please.
Like in general, in this kind of scenario where this kind of attacks can happen, how can you give us some insight how this affects the daily routine you and your family or your friends experience? Like this is something, if you never have been in a country being attacked, I'm a bit detached from this, so I would love to hear more about like how your daily routine has changed.
Look, Jay, as I said before, you as a people, you adapt to every situation, to every. I think to such situation which you live in. That is why you try to adopt your life to this style and live and try to help other people, try to help our warriors to donate money, to earn money. And that is why after such attacks, when you are informed that attack will be very big and also treaty is real, in this situation you are try to go in shelter or you try to go according the rule of according to the rule of 1 second of two walls, and if you have some attack like today, it's very difficult to work in an ordinary day.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying.
You have to interrupt your work. You have to go. You understand that treaty is real, but as I said, you adopt and you have some extra information about that it's a ballistic treaty or it's MIG's treaty or it's something another treaty, and you can not in every air alert go to shelter, because if you go in every alert, I think you can't do your work good. I think it's unreal. Also, if you're interested in court, I am a lawyer. I took part in a court hearings, and even now, I think maybe a year and a half before, judge interrupt hearings, everyone go to shelter, but now judge ask everyone about this, and if everyone say okay, we continue, the hearings is continue.
Oh, okay. Thank you for your answer. It was very insightful. It's probably like the part with the adaption or like being more aware and flexible. For example, when you drive to work or you commute in your city, it's probably very different.
Yeah, you have to adapt. In another way, I think you will have mental and physical dysfunction. It's unreal. Also, I want to say about that somebody says, oh, it's revenge for Russian sheep or something else. I'm totally disagreed with this. It's absolutely not right. Because I think if Ukraine makes to Russia significant losses, which they can't adopt or something like that, they will finish this war, I think. I think it's our aim. That is why the ship and other aims, it's good and correct.
Yeah, Vasi, I think you mentioned there like a very important point. I remember 2 weeks ago when I was in Kyiv, this Thursday there was like 5 or 6 air raid alerts every time like a MiG-31K went up, right? Then it's alarm over most part of the country, and you can't just like stop everything what you're doing, go to the shelter, then go back out of the shelter. 20 minutes later, there's another alarm. You don't know how long will be the alarm, the air raid alert, right? It's very, very annoying, and I can understand this, that people don't go for every alert into the shelters, which is, sadly a combination. Also, sometimes you hear the air defense starting working, and then you hear the alarm, and then maybe leaving your house and going over the street or somewhere to the next shelter is also a very, very dangerous thing to do. So it's always hard to make the right decision in these moments, and
Bernardo, you're absolutely correct. Sometimes it's hours of air alerts, and it's very complicated. I can tell you that in school my son go to shelter, and he will be in shelter till air alerts will be over, and also in kindergarten. I understand why for children it's such rule. But for adults they try to adopt.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, for example, my friends, they work in a restaurant. It's right next to the building which was hit in Lukyanska in Kyiv area. It's McDonald's is closing, actually.
Like, yeah, McDonald's is closing.
But every other business, every restaurant, every business has open, right? And we saw this attacks today again, and like it were like clearly civilian targets. There were like no military targets, no targets from any strategic value. I know like in the east there were like some attacks on the electricity infrastructure, but most of the attacks like in Kyiv and in other more western cities were like mainly on civilian buildings, and that's it's pure terrorism.
Yeah, it's absolutely terrorism. They even now not attacks electricity system or another important system. They attack civil buildings. They attack hospitals, apartments, trade centers. It's terrible. I think only respond can stop them. And even I am a lawyer. I understand they understand not law respond. Yeah, not about. Guilty or court decision or judgment. I think only respond in war.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like it's not like you're going for revenge, right? But like there has to be an answer to these kind of attacks, and the right answer, in my opinion, would be give Ukraine more capabilities to like really strike these air bases and strike everything which is like
they have to pay, but not pay by civil buildings. We are not terrorists. I think they have to pay ships, military ships, and other very significant military targets. They have to pay in such way. I have heard that 78 were killed on Novocherkassk.
Thank you, Vasil. So I'm going to transition to some viewer questions before we have to close down, and we should close down in a few minutes because our friend Andrew Perpetua's stream is starting now. But I will just take some time to pick some of the questions from the audience. So, John, will you be able to answer Ronaldo Roda's question if there is any confirmation of the supposed strike of the TU-22?
I haven't seen any meaningful confirmation either from the Ukrainian Air Force or from wreckage being found or like local Russian Telegram channels talking about crashes. I haven't seen anything to confirm that it went down over Kursk, as far as I can tell. Yeah, anyways, that may change, but I haven't seen anything confirmatory yet.
So if this happened, how would that be possible? Would it be because they moved too close into Ukrainian airspace?
There's a variety. I mean, it could have been a shot down. It also could have been an mid-air accident and just crashed. I mean, that happens. There's, you know, at this stage, it's too early to say what it could be, you know, if it even happened at all.
Yeah, these are fairly old aircrafts, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and then we have a question from Fjord Fella. What can we expect going forward with this winter regarding missile attacks? And do we have any idea how big the Moscovite missile stock is today? And I guess I'll refer to your chart then again.
I would expect overall it to be probably roughly as bad as last winter. The availability of Russian cruise missiles is somewhat decreased just simply because they don't have as large of stocks going into it as they previously did. That's compensated to some extent by dramatically increased production capacity, but not fully. They've tried to make up that balance with Shaheds. So what I think we'll see is that we will see raid sizes that are overall on average larger, but a Shahed is much less capable of penetrating Ukrainian air defenses than, say, a KH-101 or even a Caliber is. So I'd suspect that a lot of those factors end up roughly canceling out. The sort of the wild card here, if I can call it that, is so in terms of Ukrainian air defense capabilities, obviously they've received a significant expansion in terms of, obviously, they have multiple Patriot batteries now, they have more IRIS-TSLM batteries, they have more NASAMs, more of those systems are on the way. They have ASRAM now and a variety of other assets. They have a much more developed system of mobile anti-aircraft gun-based teams, as well as man pads for engaging the Shaheds. The overall system is more well-equipped and more sophisticated in both of those regards. But on the other hand, obviously, it's a year later now. Ukrainian inventory of interceptors for the legacy Soviet surface-to-air missile systems, so OSA, Buk, Tor, Strela, S-300P, S-300V, those stocks are going to be smaller than they were last year. Obviously, Ukraine and the US, UK, other allies and partners, we've all been moving heaven and earth trying to buy up whatever legacy Soviet interceptors we can from the global market, from other existing operators. But there's a limit to how far we can take that, given that the only places that really manufacture them are China and Russia. So there may be some inventory crunch there that may reduce, you know, in aggregate, reduce the impact of all these new Western capabilities. So in sum, I think we're probably going to end up in a situation that it's as bad, maybe slightly better than last winter. And then obviously a lot of the damage to the electrical grid has been repaired, so it won't be exactly cumulative with the damage that was done last time. If the Russians decide to target infrastructure in a concerted manner again, but not quite all of the damage has been repaired. I want to say the numbers I saw were like 70-80%. So there may be some cumulative effect from that, and obviously that isn't necessarily positive.
Yeah, so you went into the next question from Callum Dunn, what capabilities are missing for Ukraine to be able to strike? Are you bases and airframes before these missile launches? Is that even possible for Ukraine not right now?
So they've struck and destroyed TU-95s and TU-22Ms with one-way attack UAVs before. previously late last year, they used sort of the makeshift cruise missiles from the Tu-141, the Strij, those old Soviet turbojet-powered reconnaissance UAVs that were basically converted into makeshift cruise missiles. What they need is either really, given the current Western political environment in terms of the use, or rather the prohibition on the use of Western-provided security assistance on targets in Russia, what Ukraine needs is a domestically designed and manufactured short-range to medium-range ballistic missile system, or a, again, domestically designed and manufactured ground-launched cruise missile system, you know, with 1,000 to 1,500 kilometer range. That's what they need, given the current political environment. If, you know, if that political environment was to suddenly change, which I mean, you know, it almost certainly won't, but, you know, they already have the tools, Storm Shadow, Scalp EG, to prosecute some of these air bases. JASSM could do it for some of them. But obviously that's, you know, politically impossible as it currently stands.
Yeah, so there needs to be a very hard change in political what the European and US politicians mean is okay for Ukraine to prosecute as targets with the Western supplied long strike capabilities.
Yeah, I mean, the optimal path here is, you know, Ukraine needs to be able to evolve that domestic long range strike capability with either, again, short to medium range ballistic missiles or ground launched cruise missiles. The one way UAVs, they are, you know, while they are available in somewhat meaningful numbers, again, you get into the same issue with you that the Russians face with the Shaheds, is that they're very easy to defeat, even if you can produce a large number of them. So the effect they tend to have on target is pretty poor. The Ukrainian UAVs, they suffer from the added problem of low production volumes in general, and the payload on them is usually pretty terrible. I mean, we're talking like 5 kilogram warhead compared to say 30 on a Shahed. They aren't really ideal. I mean, they can get in damage sometimes, and obviously that's wonderful, but to really be able to do this in a meaningful, decisive way, that requires cruise missiles or ballistic missiles.
Yep. And of course it's something that we hope that will change, but it's a political decision that I fear is far away from where we stand right now. But let's hope that these absolutely devastating attacks from today and also before will gradually change that. I'm not so sure, but I hope for our friends in Ukraine's sake that that's going to happen. I think we should start we should start closing up, because our friend Andrew Perpetua's stream has started. So when we close up, I recommend everyone to follow his stream. There will be more details about the strikes there. I want to say thank you to Vasil for joining us, and stay safe.
Thank you, Armand.
Jonathan, did you want to say something before we go to closing?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, everybody who's participated. Thank you for everybody who's chimed in on the comments. We try to answer all questions we get. It can take us an episode to get around to it, but we do endeavor to answer every question asked of us. So I guess on Ukraine's darkest day of air attacks, on the heaviest recorded day of air attacks that Ukraine has experienced this war, it is remarkable that Ukrainians endure, their lives continue. Thank you to everybody who's participated. Slava Ukraini.
Героям слава.
Смерть ворогам.
Thank you, Jonathan. Слава нації.
Смерть ворогам.
Okay, thank you very much for joining, and see you again soon. Please subscribe, and thank you again.
On behalf of the brave.